Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hey, 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 we're back, we're black, we're brown, ambition, 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 ambition. Hey, 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 BA fam. Mandy officially had her baby. She is now mother of uno, dos, two beautiful boys. Rio is her first. I think Rio's four now. And Remy, the new baby. We love an alliteration queen, Rio and Remy. And mommy and baby and daddy and Rio are all doing really well. Certainly you can catch up with Mandy at Mandy Money on Instagram. You know, send her some well wishes. She has the cutest picture of the baby. The baby is perfection. But Mandy's doing good. She's taking her break. And so, you know, we wish her well and all this love. But I am here in the stew acting up because, you know, when Mandy's not here, I get to act up. But I'm not alone. I have a special guest in here with me today to keep me partially in line. And her name is Paige. Paige is a real estate broker and a house flipping expert. Paige Turner, to be clear, lends her expertise to Southern California's overwhelmed flippers in HGTV's Fix My Flip. So, you know, she'd be on the TVs and things. Paige made her HGTV debut on Flipper Flop Nashville and appears as a guest judge on the hit series Rock the Block. In addition to being a licensed real estate broker in three states, Paige is a certified personal trainer and co-owner of the Jopa Life, a fitness and clothing brand. She also completed in season 4 of Rock the Block alongside contractor Mitch Glue. So we welcome Paige to the stew.
Thank you, Tiffany. Breathing from all that. Thank you so much.
We love an impressive queen. We love our extra hyphenated impressive queen. So question, you know, so fitness and real estate, those are two totally different things. So what came first? What was your first foray?
Well, first was real estate. I've been a licensed real estate broker just about 20 years. So that's been my girl, my right-hand woman. And then I realized I have to stay fit to stay in this business. So that came afterwards.
So 20 years. So that means you started when you were 5. Because if you guys could take a look on YouTube, Paige looks 25. So, okay, 20 years.
20 years. I just hit the half century mark, Tiffany. So wow. I'm in disbelief that I'm 50. So
so am I, sis, because I'm like 50 where? What? Like,
you're 50?
No. I'm 43, but you don't look a day over like 25, 30, for real. I'm like,
and you look nowhere near 43.
Because the skin is skinning. Okay. I'm like, yes! So let's talk about real estate, right? So 20 years ago, how did you enter into the real estate game? Like, how did that even start for you?
Well, my kids are super adults, but I was a single mom, 3 kids under the age of 3, 2 of them were twins, 3 girls at that. So you already know, Miss, you know, Budgetista, my money was out the window for a long time. And I just had to find a way. I opted out of college, could have gone, I decided not to. And then I had a great job with Magic Johnson, but then I had 3 children in Los Angeles. And I was like, I'm afraid I'm going to be struggling for the rest of my life. And I just had to find another way outside of the hourly, you know, or even, you know, salaried position, you know, to raise my girls with everything I wanted to provide for them. And real estate became an option. I was didn't know anybody who owned a house besides Magic Johnson in Los Angeles because they're so expensive. And this is 30 years ago, they were still expensive. Mm-hmm. And so I found real estate. Somebody just said, you'd be a great realtor. And I was like, I don't know what that means, but you know, cause I've been renting my whole life. So let me go check it out. And I did.
Okay. So you started off as a realtor.
Yes.
Do you remember your very first sale and like what you made? Like what, you know, it was it a rental property that you rented out? Was it a house? You know, what did that look like?
It was, his name was Henry. I forgot his last name, but it was a trailer in a trailer park community. Yeah. I didn't even realize the land didn't come with the trailer. I said, that's the biggest house I've ever seen in my life. I'm just renting the box and I don't own the land, but I have to buy the box. Anyway, a whole other segment, right? But that was my first sale, and I think it was around $20,000. And so that 3%, about, you know, $600.
Wow. But did it make you say, like, wait, I could do this? Like, how long into, like, you starting to become a realtor did you make that sale?
It was probably in the first 6 months. And then after that, I had my feet wet, and I only knew 3 people, maybe 5 people at that time. And I went to a great church. And so after that hump, my first year and a half in real estate, I mean, I bought a house the next year. Everything just like has been going since then. Doesn't mean there weren't any valleys in all my peaks, because real estate is in peaks and valleys, as you know. But that was my first launch. And then that's when I realized that when you run your real estate business as a business, then you learn all facets of real estate. So I can sell a $10,000 piece of land to a $20,000 trailer to a $5 million house. I learned the business of real estate.
Okay. I love that. Because I was going to say, I know a lot of my friends who are like realtors, but you know, like it's only on the side. And so it's, you know, and it's difficult to be a full-time on two different, totally different profession. So, I could see that like if you make realty your business, like selling and real estate your business, how you can expedite the process of the learning curve. So do you remember your biggest sale where you were like, oh my goodness, this is the biggest, most expensive thing?
Well, I mean, the most expensive, you know, I live in Los Angeles now. So, you know, but in Nashville at the time, my biggest sale, because I've been back home in LA for 4 years. So my biggest sale in Nashville at the time, as my career was growing, was about $2.5 million.
Okay.
You know, and not really anymore, but at that time it was really big in Nashville. Everything's expensive now, you know, so. But that was huge for me coming up. And you know, out here, I hit the, should I tell you? It's not even that big yet, you know, but I've done a $5 million transaction.
Okay.
So, you know, that's the tip of the iceberg in LA though.
You know,
now I'm back home and I'm licensed and my show is going. I'm like, okay, now it's time to really get my feet wet.
No, I love that. So if someone, what are some of the, because right now we are in a very weird market. I loved your take. Like the market that we're in now, I feel like, you know, people are wanting to buy a home. They're like, should I wait? Should I buy now? Should I wait for the interest rate to drop? Should I just refinance? You know what I mean? Like, so what's your take on this current housing market? Is it a buyer's market? Is it a seller's market? Is it neither? So what's your take on this current market?
Oh, this take, it's neither. It's right in between. You know what it is? It's selling real estate. So I tell people, I'll answer one of your questions first.
Okay.
Should I buy a house now or not? This is my take on that. If you're in a position to buy a home, and if it makes more sense to own than to rent at this time in your life, then buy the house. Just don't buy the house thinking in 6 months you're gonna make a $400,000, you know, profit off of it, because that's not there anymore. Buy the home to live in it, to love it, to do whatever you need to do, if anything, as far as, you know, any renovations are, but buy the home for the long term. That's 5 to 10 years. That's what it used to be. Not this, you just pull up in a house and then in 6 months it's worth, you know, $300,000 more. That was, I mean, it was realistic, but also unrealistic way to build wealth in real estate, because it had never happened before. But that was due to historically low interest rates. But then that also caused the values to go up to a historic high. So the 2 and 3% are probably long gone. 6%, 6.5%, even 7% is not the end of the world. When I bought my house, we were at 8.5% interest rates back in the early 2000s. You go back 10 years before that, they were in the double digits, and it was normal. If you're ready to buy, you buy.
Okay, so it's neither a seller's market or a buyer's market. It's just basically kind of like a free for all. And so, yeah, ready to buy.
You know, because there's some bubbles still. Florida, I would think people were running from Florida, but that bubble is still growing. Ohio? I mean, these are growing bubbles still in a seller's market. So it just really depends on where you are. But for the most part, I think we're at this even balance where properties are staying longer on the market longer than 24 hours. You know, it's like, oh, 30, 60, 90 days on market. That used to be normal. And then at the same token, buyers aren't rushing out to buy, but sellers aren't rushing to sell. So we're doing this right now.
Because I live in New Jersey, and so I have seen like homes go for, I mean, for a long time, homes have been going for 50 to like 100,000 over asking. And now just, it's still a little crazy in Jersey. So it is one of the markets where there's still quite this bubble where things are not staying on the market. Like, it's not like what it was during the pandemic when it was super crazy. I mean, they weren't even hitting the market. Things were just being bought off market.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of new realtors who, you know, have had their license maybe under 5 years, they don't even know what DOM, days on market, means. Mm. That means your house is on the market for an average of 30, 60, 90 days, not before it hits, or 24 hours after it hits the market. They don't know, you know, and I feel kind of bad for some realtors who are newer in this business, because with all due respect, realtors do a lot of work, but houses were selling themselves for a long time. And now we have to get back to marketing, get back to promoting, you know, promoting a property, doing open houses. And it's the real business of real estate.
I love that. So I would love for you to give some advice to like two sides, right? So people are selling their property, whether now or whenever. What are the biggest mistakes that you see sellers make and the reason why their houses don't sell? Like, you know, what are those mistakes? And I'd love to know, what are some of the biggest mistakes that buyers are making when they're looking to purchase and what they can do to fix it? So let's start with sellers first. Someone comes to you and says, hey, Paige, I want to sell my house. I think it's worth a bajillion dollars or whatever it is. Like, what are your things where you're like, Lord, we're going to have to course correct before we put this on the market? Like, what are mistakes are sellers making?
Tiffany, you put that perfectly. The biggest, well, the first mistake, which is the biggest, is an unrealistic profit margin of where the market is and thinking their home is worth more than it is and going to Zillow or, you know, another, I'll just say, I won't pinpoint Zillow. I'll just say .com, who doesn't have accurate updates immediately as your licensed real estate professional will. From doing a hands-on comp. You know, you've heard the saying, you know, I lie, you lie, numbers don't lie. Yes. So you have to course correct. You have to sit down and do a real listing presentation and show the numbers of the last, I don't even go 6 months back anymore for a comp. I'm doing the last 30 to 60 days because the market has changed that much. You know, if you give me a comp from 6 months ago, I was like, that's a completely different market. January was a different market. March was a different market. We're in second quarter now. So what was going on at the end of first quarter? That's what I'm showing clients. So first, an unrealistic expectation of where the market is and being able to console them that your house is not worth what it was then. And this is why.
So well, can we get clear? Can you start paying? What's a comp? Just so people know it before you move on.
So a comp, or you might have heard CMA, a comparative market analysis. So a comp is when a real estate professional will pull the most recently sold properties within the immediate community, like within a mile and a mile and a half search of properties that have closed. Now, I also comp active and pending properties because that gives us an idea of where sellers slash agents are listing a property and like what the marketing is in that neighborhood when they're active. But just because you list a property for sale does not mean it closes at that price. Yes. So what's most important that an appraiser is going to run and look at as well is to see what has closed within those last 60 days, let's say, not comparing apples to oranges, a property that's a comp that's most like your subject property, the listing that you're going after.
Okay. So like bedrooms to bedrooms, bathrooms to bathrooms, square footage.
Stories to stories. So you don't want to, you can't comp apples to oranges. So you can't comp a two-story house that has 5,000 square feet to a one-story house that has 1,500 square feet. Now I can do it because I know how to make adjustments, but it's just not a fair analysis to provide to a seller. So you want to be as close to possible as you can to show that seller what's going on in their neighborhood with homes just about like theirs.
So one, you said sellers make the mistake of thinking their property is worth too much. What's another mistake that sellers might be making?
Another mistake is relying on the .coms instead of their real estate professional and not looking at a printed comparable market analysis of what's going on in their media market and then digesting it and saying and accepting the truth. Like, okay, here are the numbers. Like, I can't make these up. This is what these homes sold for, most like yours, and this is where you are.
Okay.
What about, do you think like sellers, should they be staging, like professionally staging, or just even just personally staging?
Oh, we can go on to number 3, 4, and 5 mistakes they're making. But yes. So properly position. Okay. Accepting that we're in this new market. Number one. Number two, properly positioning the property on the market to sell it so that it doesn't sit. You know, at the end of the day, a buyer is going to determine what any house is worth purchasing, what they're willing to pay for it, right? So that's number two. Number three, how they're presenting their property. Okay. So that does go with staging. Now, if they have a beautiful home already and we can just move some knickknacks around, declutter, you know, do those basic things, maybe lighten up some paint, change a few light fixtures, you know, not going overboard all the time is necessary. But sometimes you need a full-on staging company. And especially to say the house is vacant. I have a client right now. I had a flashback. I was about to roll my eyes and say some things, but just in case she watches this, you know, I brought in, not only did I have to send her, and I have a television show on it. And sometimes people just get so, you know, they put on their blinders and they just get so stubborn that they just won't accept any other way. And staging is a huge way to add a buyer value interest wise in your property when listing it. And when it's vacant, especially in a challenging home that might have, you know, just odd angles or an odd layout, you have to spend the money to stage it. To get the top dollar as close to as possible that you're shooting for.
Okay. All right. So they don't position their property correctly. What else?
We can go into, sometimes sellers want to over renovate a property before they sell it because they think they're going to get more money. Now this will go hand in hand with, guess what? How you're going to list the property on the market based on your comp. Because when a real estate professional is doing a comp, they're not just looking at the numbers. They're also looking at what renovations and upgrades have been added to a property to get to that list price. Okay. So it's not always needed, you know, to do this full renovation because you don't want to outprice yourself from your comp, from your market area. So, you know, again, walking through with a real estate professional will help that as well. So what's that? Number 4 or 5, Tiffany?
Yeah, like 4 or 5. So you mean something like, I remember my realtor told me something to the effect of like, you know, like I would, you know, of course you think to yourself, if I spend $100,000 on the kitchen, I'm going to get back $100,000. She's like, that you, it's not 100 to 100, that you might renovate for 100 and get back 60% of that as it results in like the increase of value. So where would you say if a seller was going to put the money toward renovating, is it still bathrooms and kitchens, or are we thinking something else now?
Well, sure, of course, it's bathrooms and kitchens. It's if you can open up a space, if you're in an older home, of course, open that space up. But it shouldn't exceed 15% of your ARV, after repair value of your home. Okay, now, okay. We're going to do a full kitchen renovation, add an extra 5% on top of that. So you really shouldn't be in for more than 20% of what the value is going to be when you're done with repairs. And of course, let's just say it is at the top of 20%. Well, let's see now, what do we have to do? Because you don't want to spend it all if you don't have to. Mm-hmm. You might be able to, you know, bring it back a little bit and just do, you know, odds and ends here and there just to have a better presentation on the market. Mm.
And
kitchens, bathrooms, if you can expand a closet in a primary bedroom, absolutely. Light fixtures, paint. If you have old school vinyl, you might want to consider tile. But if that's not in the budget, then you just have to do what's best for your market area.
And also, too, I wonder if, so I just bought a condo. It's beautiful, 100-year-old built. I love historic built, like my home, I own a house and it was built like 100 years ago, like 1919. But I also bought a condo, not too far from my house, and it's beautiful. And it was built like 95 years ago. And it's, I don't know, there's a condo in New York Hall. I think it's called the Dakota. And so this was supposed to be like back in the day, it's in Newark, New Jersey in the Forest Hill section. This was supposed to be like the answer to the Dakota in Newark. But it's really beautiful. You could tell it was like top tier luxury because my condo is 2,800 square feet, 5 bedrooms, 3.5 bath. Yeah, fireplace, a huge picture window to New York City. So this was supposed to be like where the wealthy, you know, like, yeah. So I loved it for that reason. And plus I've lived in Newark for the last, I don't know, like 10, 15 years. And I love living next to the city without living in the city. And so anyway, I bought it. And so I remember the woman who I bought it from, I want to say that she purchased it, I think from the city or like a tax deed or whatever. She purchased it and then she renovated it. I don't know how much she put into it, but to your point, one of the mistakes she made is that she priced it super high. So I saw that she had purchased it for $375. I think give or take, because I know the guy who did the renovations, it was about $100,000 with materials that she put into it. So you figure $375, $475. She put it on the market for $675. So she's trying to make $200,000 during like pandemic when things were selling. But the issue with condos are HOA fees. Mm-hmm. And so you think to yourself, even if you could afford the condo itself, the bank is also like, can you also afford, because the HOA fees are not inexpensive. I'm always candid. Mine are nearly $1,300. You know, and so she kept it too long at that price point. Then she dropped it down to $650. But I feel like all of her drop downs were months too late. You know, and then she dropped it down.
You're too late.
Yes. And then she dropped it down to $575, and then she dropped it down to $540 or $550, and that's when I came along and I tried to offer $470, which she was not happy about. Cause I was like, it's cash. But
yes, girl. Yes, cash. Yes. First of all, I celebrate you for that. Yes, absolutely. You know? Yeah. You know, people, this is what I tell people when we have to do the first price drop, cause they don't listen to me in the beginning. I said, would you pay this much for this house at this amount in this time?
Yes.
Easy question. If the answer is absolutely not, then we're priced too high.
Yes. And I think that she, because she knows like one, like and there's a train station that's gonna be going directly to like New York. Well, Newark already has a number of train stations, but there's a new station that they're building down the street that's gonna go directly to New York. So I think it was all these things. It's like, you know, you can't recreate this building. And I understand all those things, but I'm like, girl, it's still Newark. I love Newark, but it's still Newark, you tried it. And so I got her down to $520 because I was paying, like I said. I don't plan on selling. This is something to add to my trust and my heirs will have it later. And so that, I think that was a huge mistake. Plus it was odd though, cause she renovated it so specific to her style. She's a textile, retail, I guess. And so everything was like really bright, bold patterns and every tile was different. So I also think one of the reasons why people didn't buy is because they didn't see cause I had just done a renovation. So I could see a lot of the renovation that was necessary was really just cosmetic, you know, because she had done the work, thank God, because the place is 100 years old. She had done all the electric and all the plumbing, which that would have deterred me from buying it if I did not know that had been done and up to code and we got to pull permits. And I was like, great. So I was like, girl, some paint, some tile, I got that. You know, so I was fortunate to purchase it. And then sure enough, another unit in the building just sold for $550 just a month after mine sold. I know they were happy because they got a comp.
Yes, I was just thinking that they had a good comp. Yep.
I know they was like, yes, because they're on the 8th floor and I'm on the 2nd floor, although the building is on a hill. So the 2nd floor is closer to like the 6th or 7th floor in the building. So that's why I have such great views. But so they're on the 8th floor, so they have these 360 views. And so, you know, but we're about the same size. But I just share all that to say, I feel like as a seller, she made all the mistakes that you're mentioning. And maybe she could have gotten the $575 back then, you know, had she dropped the price sooner. But you know, I got this beautiful place that I get to keep. Hey, BA fam. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. That's incredible. This is according to Indeed data and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 150 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Okay, it's smart. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Brown Ambition. Just go to Indeed.com/Brown Ambition right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Brown Ambition. Terms and conditions apply. You need to hire. You need Indeed.
Hey, BA fam. This episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. All right, BA fam, you know we work hard and we play hard, but when it comes to investing and having your money in the market, you want your money to be working for you. That's exactly what the Betterment Automated Investment and Savings app can help it do. Keeps your money out there working hard and kicking you know what. I love Betterment because it makes it easy for even a beginning investor to figure out how to put their money in the market and set it and forget it and be at peace with that, because you know Betterment has got you covered with their automated investment and savings app. Their technology is going to give you advanced tools that are built to help you maximize those returns. All you got to do is visit Betterment.com to get started. Learn more about high yield cash accounts at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance not guaranteed. Cash reserve offered through Betterment LLC and Betterment Securities. Betterment is not a bank. All right, BA fam, y'all know when it comes to financial advice, you have to trust your source. That's why you listen to Brown Ambition, right? And when I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. I've been a longtime fan of NerdWallet. In fact, I almost work there a couple of times, because when it comes to financial experts and writing, they really know how to give you the best reviews of financial products. I honestly wouldn't sign up for a credit card today if I hadn't looked at a review on a site like NerdWallet myself. And honestly, if y'all haven't learned about NerdWallet, you're missing out. And with their help, what could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms of each credit card issuer apply.
So now that we've talked about sellers making mistakes, and maybe that's one too, do you think unless you think someplace is going to be your forever home, how specific should people get with like making design choices? You know,
well, that should be, you know, one of our points. Thank you for bringing that up, is, you know, selling when you renovated it so design specific to your taste, instead of thinking that, you know, I might sell this in the next 5 years, so let me just renovate it for the market in something classic that will, you know, last, and then I can just decorate it like with my staging in my own taste, if this isn't going to be a forever home. And of course, we buy real estate, you know, real estate's an asset. We don't know if we'll have to sell it one day or not, you know what I'm saying? But if you, most people know, like you said, I'm going to buy and hold this. You know, I don't have any intentions of selling it, so I can make it my own for now. But, you know, in her case, it being so specific, that's a big detriment when you go to put on the market, especially so high. And you know it's high when you first list it. You know, and as agents, you know, we're just like, okay, but let me just put in writing that you understand that this is not, you know, the list price I think you should be at, so that you don't get mad at me. Because then they get mad, and then I get fired, then you get to the next agent, then they're going to list it where I told
you. That's exactly what happened. She had like three different agents, and I was just, because I could see kind of like the record, and I was just like, I guess she finally got down to the price. Yes.
It's just difficult, and not living in reality of where the market is, that your house is worth more than the market is calling for. So I think that it's very important to think about what your long-term goals are when you're renovating, so that it's not so owner-specific, and then it knocks you out. You know, she probably could have gotten more, but you know, when buyers walk in, they're thinking, okay, I love the unit. You know, you're a visionary. So when you're a visionary, it's much different for us, you know, but most buyers aren't. I would say 98% of buyers aren't visionary. So when they walk in and they already have this high price tag, you got them in. So the price tag didn't scare them. So that's good. But what scared them most was, what am I going to have to do inside this apartment?
Yes.
You know, this condo, I should say, sorry, that's going to cost me even more than I have to pay with this high price tag. And you know, you have your good agents that are like, well, you know, but you can do this, you can do it, you know, over time. And then buyers are like, no, I want move-in ready at this price point. This is too much. Plus the HOAs. Yeah, girl.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's weird because, like I said, she bought it. I think I want to say she bought it like 2019, renovated 2020, and then put it on the market 2021. But it wasn't renovated in a way, I don't know why she put it on the market, because it wasn't renovated in a way that you would think someone, it wasn't a flip. It didn't feel like that. It felt very personal, you know, like tile from Argentina and, you know, like drapery from here. I mean, it was very specific. So I'm just really, I don't, like I said, I never got the backstory of while she was selling it. But I just remember thinking, this person, whoever renovated this, had not intended to sell it because it's just so specific. So now let's dip into, like, okay, now I'm a buyer, and like, what can I do as a buyer to, because I feel like, well, she was really difficult, but I feel like as I was a cash buyer, and I just feel like, you know, maybe we could have negotiated differently. Maybe I could have got it for a little less, but what can buyers do to get the best deal? Because one of the things I made the mistake of, and I didn't listen to my agent, so, you know.
Why didn't you listen to her on? I need to know.
Because I think the first offer I put in was $450. She was asking for $550, and she was like, girl, this lady is going to be mad at you. I was like, she's not going to be mad. I put this cash. She was like, okay. And she was. And I will say, for a couple of months, she did not respond. She was like, girl, go ahead. Because she was, even with a cash offer, she not even, their agent was like, we're not even going to entertain this. And so my agent told me that it was a little on the low side where it might be offensive. And I just was like, it's been on the market for 2 years. I mean, it's a cash offer. I would at least think they would push back, but they didn't. It wasn't until nothing else would go through that they kind of came back to the table to negotiate. So I know as a buyer that, you know, just as sellers want to go too high, buyers, I know that one of the mistakes is we want to go too low. And so, like, what other mistakes do buyers make?
You know, and I'm not so opposed with your offer. I'll tell you why. It was sitting for 2 years. It's very owner specific. I probably would have done the same thing. Here's the deal. I don't know, you know, if somebody's desperate on the other side of, you know, this transaction or not. So, okay, I don't want to say the worst I can do, but, you know, the worst I can do is try, you know, $100,000. I mean, I've gotten deals like that before, you know. Now, the other side of that coin is, well, it has been on the market for 2 years and she hasn't dropped it. So she's not that desperate. So now let's manage expectations. Okay. Now, if I was the seller's agent, I'd be like, you can't be mad because we've had the property on the market for 2 years. Of course, they're going to lowball you because they don't know if you're desperate or not. You know, just counter back. This is when people say that, you know, it's business, you know, not personal. All business is personal because money is very personal, you know. And I also say, well, you know, to buyers, all transactions are cash at the end of the day. You know, when a seller closes, they're going to get cash in their bank account. Okay. Now, cash deals also have or should have a little bit more, you know, controlling interest because it is cash. Because guess what? Some loans might not go through. You might get to the closing table and the buyer went out and bought a new car and now their debt to income ratio is upside down. So, you know, cash, I definitely like to massage, you know, and I tell sellers that, like, listen, let's be nice. You know, let's just counter back. Even if your counter back is back to your full list price, just counter back. You know, let's take the emotional side out of it. So on the buyer side, you know, that's really going to be house specific. You know, that depends on a lot, but I'm not mad that you did that. I would have done the same thing.
Okay.
With caution, like your agent told you what was going to happen. It happened. So it's always 50-50. But I think that buyers, mistakes they make are that, you know, they're not prepared. They need to be prepared for reality as well. You know, depending on what market they're in, you know, because a property's been sitting on the market doesn't mean you can't ask for the stars, but you just have to be, you have to massage the negotiation. So if I'm going to offer less on a property, then I'm going to have less contingencies, you know, but nowadays buyers are back to where they can ask for closing costs. They can ask for assistance again, you know? So, I can really go in 10 different ways with this, Tiffany, but I will say this with buyers, they need to be prepared for the counters, for their closing costs, you know, talking about, you know, mistakes they make. They're not the HOA fees, they have to consider that as well, you know, because it's not just in condos, it's in some subdivisions as well. Mm. And I like HOAs. Some people don't like HOAs, but I'm here for it because it just helps maintain your value and, you know, the condition of your neighborhood and buildings. So, mm-hmm. you know, other buyer mistakes would be, you know, again, they have to live in reality as well, you know, with their finances, with how a house is positioned, not offering. I just helped my sister with a house in Philly. I'm not licensed in Philly, but she was so enraged because somebody offered $30,000 off her list price and asked for $8,500 in closing costs. And I said, well, number one, you don't have anything else coming in. You don't have any other offers coming in. You can't be mad at them. You know, and so, but that buyer's agent was a good buyer's agent. She said, let's do it. And guess what? My sister had to sell. So that buyer won.
Okay, because you never know, I guess, unless you ask. She wanted me to come at like a 470 just to be like, you know, and I was just like, let's see. I mean, I didn't end up getting it, but I ended up getting like, you know, I know that what I asked one of my friends who's a real estate investor, and I was like, well, what do you think? And he gave me some good advice. He said, one, Tiffany, like, is this where you're going to be living? And I said, yes, I really love this place. My sister's going to be taking my house and she's going to be paying the carrying costs because that house is paid off. And so I was like, but I just want to, you know, I don't want to take care of a property like that anymore. Like, and I love that this is all one floor without being, I don't like ranches, you know, but so this is one floor, but in a way that's attractive to me. And it's around the corner. So I'm still right here in the neighborhood with all my friends and my family. So I said, I'm not planning on, you know, selling. I mean, could I potentially, if something comes up, I might purchase something additional. He said, okay. And then two, he was like, is this something where if it were to go, you'd be like, whatever, these are a dime a dozen. Because, you know, some homes, there's certain neighborhoods, these houses come up. And I said, no, this is 100-year-old. And he was like, Tiffany, he's like, I was going to tell you that, but that's your business to say. He was like, 100-year-old property, 5 bedrooms, 3.5 bath, fireplace, 2,800 square feet. And he was like, you're right. It's not going to come up again. I mean, unless it's in that building, which, you know, but he was like, the likelihood of this unit, something like this coming up again, it's probably not as likely. So you have to ask yourself that too. So these were some questions that he had me ask because I was feeling salty as well. I was like, oh, so she didn't want to, now you want to come back to the table. But I was like, girl, go ahead and get your house. Stop being sassy. Because someone, it was, I didn't know this, but it had been under contract. And then it fell through because of the HOA fees that they could afford how much the house was worth, but they couldn't afford, the HOA fees made it that you had to be basically qualified for like a house that was like 700,000 versus the 500, 550 because of the HOA fees adding an additional $1,300 to your monthly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You just have to remember one more buyer mistake that I see a lot is that buyers, they're just as sassy as you were, right? With counters and everything. And I have to stop a buyer and say, listen, if you love this home as your next 5 to 10, you know, your forever home right now, mm-hmm. then why in the world would you let however much it is come between, you know, it might be 5,000, whatever it is. If I've proven to you that the comp is there, it's a great investment, you love the house, all right, let's take the sass off. And I don't know what happened between you and the seller,
yes.
but you can't lose this house over, you know, a couple of $1,000, which is only affecting your yes. note a couple of hundred. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
So, and that's what my agent was like. I could tell she was just breathing deep. Like, no, she, this is so beautiful. It's so perfect. It's in your neighborhood. It's around the corner.
It's what you wanted. Tiffany?
Yeah, literally. Because I even had like some random on my desk. I would love views of New York City, but like, what is it? And literally walk in and you're like, it looks like a picture window, like the whole wall. And all you see is the New York City skyline. And everyone in that building is like, you should see the 4th of July. You should see New Year's Eve, the fireworks display. And I just was like, so she was like, because in the moment I was just angry, like that it seemed like the buyer. I'm like, but she doesn't know you. The buyer does not know you, Tiffany. Like, this is not a personal. So I was so glad that I was able to work through that and get the, you know, the home that I really wanted. And I really do love it. And yeah. And I'm renovating now. And it's, you know, literally it's like some paint. She had a lot of wallpaper, which came off in a day. And so, yeah, the renovations, you know, should be done. And next, I did. And I said that I was like, thank God, I, you know, like, thank God for Rihanna. Cause she was like, girl, I was like, do I have to spank Tiffany? Like, what is happening? So is there anything else? Like, as we, so what are you, how about this? We'll end with this. Like, what are some of your predictions based upon, you know, you've been in this industry for 20 years. What are you like, what are your spidey senses telling you about, like, what might home ownership and buying and things and selling, what do you see in the next 5 to 10 years? That, is there any new trends, you know, something that we should look out for? Like, what are you thinking?
And Tiffany, I had to stop making predictions because I was like, some days I'm right, some days I'm wrong. You know, I said, let me just live in today and we can talk about 30 days ago and maybe 30 days ahead, right? Yeah. So I tell people, you know, I got my real estate license in 2003, opened my first brokerage in 2006, had it for 15 years, so I moved back home here. So I've been in a much bigger recession and a housing crash. I was in it for the 2007 one. Mm-hmm. And what I have learned from there, and then came into the seller's market in 2016, and then who knows what just happened in 2020, you know, with that burst, well, with interest rates dropping. This is what I've learned, that you have to pay attention to daily interest rates and what's going on in our government, you know, and then follow the successful people in real estate that you admire. So I am an Inman junkie. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Tony Robbins says that success leaves clues. You have to follow, you know, whoever you're, even if it's a mentor in your head. I didn't have a mentor in real estate, you know, as I was growing up in real estate. Unfortunately, I had to learn the hard way, you know, because I was working in my business and not on it. You have to look around what's ahead of the curve. You have to keep reading what's going on in finance, in, you know, with our government, in commercial. Commercial is plummeting. Commercial real estate is plummeting. You know, what does that mean for, you know, residential? So you have to take the responsibility of looking in your immediate market as well as around the country of what's going on, so that we can predict what's going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years. Right now, I'm telling people buy and hold. I mean, in California, New York, New Jersey, you know, we're high no matter what happens in the world, right? So there's still room to flip and do all that fun stuff, which I've built my business on. But if you can buy and hold properties right now and still be able to rent them, house hack. I wish I was told to house hack when I first got in real estate instead of just buying my first home, like that debt to income ratio we're talking about. I didn't have anybody tell me that. I would have been a house hacking fool. You know what I'm saying? I would have never had to pay my mortgage, not one day. So if you can house hack, you know, interest rates are not killing us. In the 6% range, they're still okay. Especially okay. If you can get that good deal, you know, get them to tick down and look at the long term. So then 5 to 10 years, no matter where we are, you own an asset. You have a property. You know, and you will be able to do something with it, even if that means that asset is paying your minimum living requirements. That's still an asset. So yes. Look for something you can buy and hold. Duplex, triplex, quad, small apartment building, house hack. You know, that's where I am.
So just for clarity, for people might say, what's house hacking? Can you just describe real quick?
So house hacking is basically when you buy more than one property, so a multifamily unit, and those units are paying your entire mortgage and hopefully then some, so that you can pay for not only payers and your taxes and insurance, but also pay for some of your lifestyle. So, well, there goes my necklace. So that's what house hacking is. You buy one unit and then you rent, or maybe even Airbnb, the other 2 to 3, 4 units out, and then those units are paying for your entire mortgage.
Yes.
While you're living.
I love that. Super smart. So Paige, it's been so awesome having you on today. I feel like I learned so much. I don't feel so bad about, you know, trying to get $100,000 off my condo. So that's one. I also know that I totally take your advice. Although I plan on keeping my condo, I too like to renovate in a way that's traditional and then add the funk with, like, you know, like my couch and my decorations and things like that. So that's my plan first. You know, I'm going to take that advice and do that as well. Is there anything else that we didn't talk about and that you'd like to share? Like maybe one lasting piece of advice? And also, where can the people find you and connect with you?
Well, Tiffany, thank you for having me, you know, on Brown Ambition again. I'm so happy to be here. And I'm so proud of you. I mean, you know, you said so much that is so encouraging to myself, to your listeners. You know, here you are in your beautiful brown skin, doing it and doing it well and taking those chances, even, you know, offering $100,000 less, but guess what? It was cash. You know, we should all aspire to do that. You know, that's always number one, right? One thing I wanted to say though, that's good for when you do close on your home, you can make it your own with the, you know, mixing textiles with your staging, but also you mentioned wallpaper, like removable wallpaper is a thing. You don't have to put up old school wallpaper that will stick forever. And then that way, if you get tired of your own wallpaper every quarter, you can change it up, you know? So you know, there are a lot of cute things you can do in your home that won't cost a lot. Adding, you know, wooden slats to a wall that you can get from Amazon. on, you know, to add a feature wall. There's a lot you can do as a buyer. Okay. And that's good to remove when you become a seller. Nice and easy. So I forgot the last question.
No, because the last question is just like, where can people find you? I feel like they're going to listen and be like, I want to learn more. I want to watch her show.
You are so fun to talk to. Can't be over already, Tiffany. I'm like, there's no more questions. Wait a minute. We can do this for a couple more hours. You can find my show, Fix My Flip. We are in the middle of season 2 on HGTV. It's also streaming on the all new Max, which I'm so excited about. And if you don't know, Max is the newly revised version of HBO Max. It's now called Max. You can catch up on season 1 and also check out the episodes that have already aired on for season 2 of Fix My Flip. It's such a blessing to have the platform on HGTV, and I'm able to share with great platforms like yours. I'm on Instagram at Paige Turner Unlimited, and also on Twitter and Facebook and everywhere else. And yeah, that's me. I'm just so happy to have been here with you.
No, thank you. Are you going to write a book, Paige? You have a book?
I do have a book. I wrote it in 2019. And then the pandemic hit, and then I got all out of stores, but it is on Amazon. I think I'm going to relaunch it. It's a good book. It's called The Go Life. Go is an acronym for seizing your greatest opportunity now and not to mismanage your season. So, you can definitely tell that I'm a real estate flipper because I have just so many analogies to, you know, the housing market, but you know, and how, you know, I've been able to seize my greatest opportunity. So it's called The Go Life. It's on Amazon and it's a fun book.
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming on. We certainly would love to have you back again. So go ahead and follow Paige Turner Unlimited on all the socials and and watch her show. So thank you.
Oh yeah. And Tiffany, Fix My Flip is on every Thursday at 9/8 Central. We're on primetime, baby. Listen, you're doing primetime. Okay. I'm primetime. Let's go. You know?
I love it. I love it. All right, y'all. We will see you next week. Actually, we'll see you on Friday for our BAQA. You know, if you have questions that need answers when it comes to business, career, or money, you can ask them and we will answer them on BAQA. So see you guys on Friday. And Paige, I will see you hopefully one day soon.
Very soon. Thank you, Tiffany.
Hey, BA fam, we could not do this show without your support or the support of our team behind the scenes. The Brand Ambition podcast is produced by Imani Crosby and Dennis Stemplinski is our in-house tech guru. I am your co-host, Mandy Woodruff-Santos, and we will see y'all next week, BA fam.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a PS to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the PS first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.